Braves, Bulldogs, Falcons, Yellow Jackets, Hawks, Eagles. From the heart of Georgia, it's the Bill Shanks Show.
Happy Wednesday and welcome to our broadcast. I'm Bill Shanks with Russ Brown. We're in studio today and we are glad you are with us on the final day of November. All right, so that final day of November, Russ, must mean that conference championship games are upon us.
Mm-hmm.
Check. And we got to have some baseball trades soon, don't we?
Been waiting.
Has it been, I mean, not just the Braves, but has
anybody.
It been a little slow?
It really feels like it. And I wonder, you know, are we going to start to see some movement on Sunday when these winter meetings get cranked up?
Yeah.
And I hope so, because I know that transfer portal's getting ready to open up, so we'll have our college football hot stuff going for sure.
You're right, and it's going to be crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well,
I think
and
so.
You know what? I try to remember that this is the first winter meetings that's been normal since 2019, right? They didn't meet 2 years ago. I don't think they had. I think they had a bunch of Zoom meetings last year, and so. I think the poop's getting ready to hit the fan a little bit, but still, it just seems that it's very slow even through November. Of course, a year ago, this year, last year, we knew that that was the last day before the lockout was going to hit, right? November mm-hmm. the 30th, 2021, because everything was going to be turned off on December the 1st. So there were a few things that were made, but it just seems like, even though it hasn't been normal in a couple of years, that there was more activity in previous off seasons in November compared to right now. So, with that in mind, I'm hoping we're going to have trade rumors and God, just give us one good Braves trade. Just leak something, Alex.
Something. Anything. Something. We had a guy we met last night called up earlier today and said he had heard a Vaughn Grissom trade rumor.
Ooh,
like, where did you find that at?
What's he heard? What for who?
It didn't really say who, just that maybe he was being shopped a little bit. I don't know if that's true. I mean,
okay.
Because nothing leaks out of Alex's office. So.
No, not much.
I know who my number one trusted source is, so if he didn't say it, it's not true.
Well, I it's kind of like yesterday with Clay from Kentucky. You know, let's think of a trade rumor like William Contreras for Corbin Burnes and Willie Adames. Let's come up with something because it's very, very tough to get anything out of the front office of the Braves. So we'll see. Who knows? I'm just ready for some activity and to kind of complement what's going on with our football stuff. Well, Christine McVie passed away. That stinks. She was, of course, the great sound from Fleetwood Mac. 79. God, I didn't know she
wow.
was that old. Holy cow. I think all of our people that we listened to in the 80s and 90s are all of a sudden waking up old. Not me, of course. I'm still, you know, 41.
Right, exactly. They're old.
That's right.
Not us.
They're getting old. Gray hair in my head is from something else. I don't know what it is. Too much fiber.
Wisdom.
Anyway.
Wisdom.
Wisdom. Is that it?
Okay. It's wisdom. Yes.
Okay. That's it. Getting closer, of course, to the SEC championship game. And I don't know if you could tell by my notes, but I kind of got obsessed with this running game thing that I started last on yesterday's show. But I think what information I kind of found was kind of interesting, Russ, as far as the turn that we are seeing. Again, if you missed yesterday's show, and I'll give Jake Roos for kind of triggering the thought in my head, and he basically said very simply, not on purpose, like I don't think, hey, they're just kind of running the ball more. And then you look at the results and like, well, yeah, they kind of are. And to see the numbers, it kind of plays out that way. Now, what I did in preparing for the show, and I enjoy the prep work for the show because you kind of learn something when you go and research stuff like this. And I'm bad about lists. Russ will tell you I like to make lists sometimes. But it was interesting as I looked at the Georgia rushing leaders going back to 2017, so 16 seasons, of how many yards they finished with and also how many carries they had. And I'm going to go through the whole list. I mean, you know most of the names. No Sean Marino in 07, 08. With Sean Ealy for 2 years, Isaiah Crowell, then Gurley for two, Chubb for 3 out of 4, Swift for 2, Zamir for 2, and then Kenny McIntosh. The interesting part, though, was that Kenny McIntosh, with potentially 3 games left to go, as the leading rusher, has a very low amount of carries compared to the other 15 seasons that we're talking about. Now, there was 1 year in 2009 when they were not very good, when Sean Ealy had 717 yards on 125 carries. But again, 122 for Kenny McIntosh is the high number of carries. And then you break it down, Russ, and see that in his first 6 games, Kenny McIntosh averaged 7.3 carries per game, and in the last 6 games, 13.2. So again, and I kept on thinking I wasn't being very clear with what I was trying to say, but as we had questions about why is Stetson Bennett throwing the ball less, and we're bringing up things such as, and I think it's still a legitimate wonder, about Stetson's arm. I mean, again, it was the Mississippi State game where the girl was on the sideline rubbing down his arm. So I don't think they were on a date.
No.
So, I mean, something was going on where it was uncomfortable, cramping up, aching, whatever, for her to stand there and just kind of massage his arm. And you look then at the running plays and how obviously Kenny McIntosh has increased as the season has gone along. And again, I'm saying all of this for positive. This is not a knock on Stetson. This is not anything at all, but showing, I think, that the Georgia offense is more balanced than it was earlier on in the year. And look, when they ran the ball more than they passed the ball in games, they actually had a smaller margin of victory. Listen to this. This was kind of interesting, I thought. The margin of victory for Georgia in the games they passed the ball more than they ran the ball, 5 out of the 12 times they played, and it was 32.8. Margin of victory in the games Georgia ran the ball more than they passed the ball was 22.7. So they obviously were passing the ball more when they had bigger leads and were kind of running the score up a little bit. But still, I mean, look, they have beaten their 12 opponents so far this year by an average margin of 26.9 points per game. So, I mean, they're winning by almost 4 touchdowns. If you want to know how good Georgia is, I don't think you need to know more than that. They're winning by 26.9 points per game. Now, then you look in, I think it was appropriate, and I did look at Michigan and TCU, the other two undefeated teams that are behind Georgia. Michigan has actually had a higher margin of victory against all opponents, 27.2, just marginally. I mean, they scored 3 more points than Georgia has this year. TCU, 201 points margin of victory. So they have beaten their 12 opponents on average by 16.8 points per game. Then you look at the margin of victory against ranked opponents at the time of the game. And again, that's the when they played the opponent, what were they? For Georgia, for example, they played 2 teams that were ranked in the top 25 at the time of the game. Oregon on the first week of the season. The Ducks, of course, were ranked 11th, and then the Volunteers were ranked number 1. Georgia's margin of victory in those 2 games averaged 30 points, so they beat Oregon and Tennessee by a combined 60 points. Michigan played 2 teams that were ranked in the top 25 at the time of the game. Penn State and Ohio State, they actually beat those 2 teams by an average of 23 points. And then TCU has actually played 5 games against teams that at the time of the game were ranked Oklahoma, Kansas, Oklahoma State, Kansas State, and Texas. And the average margin of victory for TCU in those five games against ranked opponents was 11.6. Now, of course, we're just kind of playing with numbers here because we're getting ready for some very big games. And again, trying to obviously compare what's going on with Georgia and the teams that are behind them. I think my big theory about this running game improvement, though, is Kenny McIntosh obviously doing better. We told you yesterday on the show that of the 844 plays on offense that Georgia has had so far this year, it is very, very even compared to other years. So far in the 12 games Georgia has played this season, they have ran the ball 52.5% of the time and passed it 47.5% of the time. Go back the last 2 years. Last season, Georgia ran the ball 57.2% of the time. And then in 2020, they ran it 55.1% of the time. Now, that was with, of course, Zamir White and James Cook, the two running backs who took over after DeAndre Swift left to go to the NFL draft. And Swift, obviously, was a player that, going back to the 2017 as a freshman, when Nick Chubb and Sony Michel were getting ready to leave as seniors, Swift took over and had two 1,000-yard seasons, the last two that Georgia has had. So when they turned the running back job over to Zamir White, of course, he was coming off back-to-back ACL injuries on both legs, and he still led the team in rushing both in 20 and 21, and last year had 856 yards. But again, Zamir White had 202 more yards than Kenny McIntosh has so far, but he's also carried the ball 38 more times, which you can imagine that if Kenny McIntosh plays in three more games, he's going to be right around that same mark as well. So, again, my point is I think Georgia is finally to the point where they have established their running game again after being somewhat ambiguous. Is that perhaps a term to use? Somewhat kind of in the middle, kind of not sure what they had, perhaps, Russ, of all right, we've got Kenny Mack, we've got Dejon Edwards, we've got obviously the Branson Robinson kid, we've got Kendall Milton, who's always hurt. So we lost Andrew Paul in the fall. What do we have? And, you know, they came out and Kenny McIntosh was getting a lot of receptions, a lot of receiving yards early on, and now it's changed. And I guess from this information that I've looked up, my question is, all right, moving forward, Russ, against LSU and then perhaps against a USC defense, which kind of allows a lot of points comparatively, right? And then maybe perhaps against TCU or Michigan, is this offense going to be even more dangerous moving forward with the offense being even more balanced with the running game kind of getting going?
Yeah. You know, and I'm really curious to see how they come out offensively on Saturday because of this, you know, and are they trying in a way to, for lack of a better term, bait these teams into stacking the box and saying, you know, in these last two games, their run to pass has been about 66%. And I mean, yards per carry have just been silly good. And I wonder if there's a little bit of that going on because it's almost like two different offenses, right? I mean, you look at the team that beat Oregon in the first game of the year compared to the team that beat Georgia Tech at the end of the year, both very effective, both games kind of runaways at the end, but how they got there was different. And how do you I'm thinking about it, if you're LSU and that defensive staff in Baton Rouge and you're watching this tape, I mean, it's almost like, well, which team are we going to see on Saturday? And I think because, you know, the thing of it is, if you think, well, maybe something's going on with the quarterback, let's stack the box, and you've kind of taken the bait, and that's not the case, and they score two quick touchdowns, well, now you're behind.
Right.
And it's I mean, you can change the defense, but you're down 14 against a team that doesn't give up a lot of points, you know, or if you say, hey, we're not going to fall for that, or you're just going to sit back and let them average 6 yards a carry. So I'm really curious to see what happens when Georgia has the football – especially there in their first two or three series on Saturday, to see, you know, is there reason for concern here with Stetson Bennett? I mean, when he threw on Saturday, he looked fine to me.
Yeah.
So I don't think there is. I think they're just taking what the defenses are giving them and maybe trying to set it up for this playoff run a little bit because, you know, you're going to see some teams that that might be able to take one or two of your weapons away. So you got to be ready to, you know, as they always say, Bill Belichick tries to make you play left-handed. So maybe that's what Georgia's been doing a little bit here, is just playing a little left-handed on purpose.
Well, and Russ, we've been talking about the fact that Georgia has at times looked bored in its presentation on the field. They've got to feel that they are better than their 12 opponents. They obviously proved that. And, you know, it also brings to the light the question of, well, was Kirby Smart holding off something more impressive for the postseason? And sometimes I get a little irritated with that conversation of, well, it's vanilla because we're waiting. Well, first of all, football didn't start last year. Right? It's not a whole lot that we can see that we haven't seen before. Now, we may not know that you can do certain things, but after 12 games, you kind of do know what the teams can do. If I'm Brian Kelly and LSU staff, though, and I'm looking at these numbers about the running game, and I'm thinking, okay, like you said, we got to be very careful about maybe, you know, stacking the box a little bit to not let this running game, number one, control the clock, and number two, eat up yards, because guess what, Russ? Texas A&M did it. Yeah. And if Texas A&M did it, and if I'm Todd Monken, I'm sorry, Stetson, but you're not going to throw the ball 45 times against this team. I'm probably going to run it 30-something or more, because they just put – now, Devin Ashane is a tremendous running back and a potential second-round pick, right? But, I mean, Russ, they ran all over LSU's run defense the other day. So, but Russ, if Brian Kelly was trying to do that, you're going to have number 19 and number 0 waving at Stetson saying, hey, look at here. I'm right here, baby. Throw me the ball.
Yep.
I mean, that's the alternative, and that's why I think this run improvement in the offense is so dangerous for Georgia.
Yeah, and I mean, there's just so much because of those two, the two tight ends you just mentioned there, Washington and Bowers. I mean, from a personnel standpoint, from a matchup standpoint, they just give you such an advantage, because if you take the field in 21 personnel or 22 personnel, I mean, what's the defense going to do? I mean, because you're going to have to treat Brock Bowers like a receiver. So
right.
If you play nickel, they're going to shove it down your throat. If you play your base defense, you know, they can open it up in the pass game. So it's almost like a pick your poison a little bit. And that's why, again, the matchup here in this game on Saturday, because you do have Perkins and Ojulari on that LSU defense. I mean, they've got players. They've
right.
got some guys over there. How do they use those guys to try to get matchups, and what matchups work to Todd Monken's advantage? And then how do they take – and the other thing, too, is, I mean, with the Georgia offense, is you – I mean, I'm not saying you have to take chances, but that's a hell of a defense backing you up, you know. So, I mean, there's a lot of room for error there that other teams don't have.
But, see, that's why the coaching of this team is so interesting, and why Kirby Smart has been almost perfect in doing it. And he saw it with Alabama. He saw – how many times did he see Nick Saban orchestrate his offense based on what his defense was doing, because of the championships that were won with Kirby Smart as the DC? How many of them were probably because of the defense?
Yeah.
Well, probably a lot of them. So Kirby knows how to almost massage the games, I think, of what he wants to do offensively, because he does have that defense in his back pocket, right? He's got that – and again, it gets back to the question that I was asking of, all right, how does LSU score 30 points on this Georgia defense? Because I feel like that if you think you can't answer that question appropriately and that they have a very little chance of doing that, then you get into, all right, well, how is Georgia going to do its thing? And someone just asked me on Twitter here, Colby just said, I'm still wondering this. Do we even know what Georgia has offensively? I don't think the playbook has been open, but maybe 25% or so to speak. And he may be right, but the other thing that is kind of a wild card here is the fact that A.D. Mitchell may be back. And, you know, Trent Smallwood made the point on Twitter as well today, Russ, and I retweeted this. This is the second straight year that Georgia has been without its top wide receiver all season. Now, I know what Bowers is, but top wide receiver, George Pickens made his return for the playoffs last year. A.D. Mitchell is likely to also return for the playoff run this year. The Bulldogs are 12-0 without their second best playmaker behind Brock Bowers on offense. And now their running game is getting better by the game. Now, I could get in the weeds and trying to see, okay, well, of those six teams compared to the front six teams, who's got the better rush defense? You know, I don't have time for all that. Take what I can give you. But the point is, I think that it's making the discussion in the LSU coaching room, Russ, even more complicated.
Yeah. Oh, I don't think there's any question about it, because you can't be wrong. You can't to win this game. You've got to stop Georgia's offense. That's how, you know, everybody's been asking all year long. How do you beat Georgia? You got to stop them, because you're not going to score a lot. Like you said, how does LSU get to 30? They don't. Right. Well, our play two games. Maybe in two games they can get to 30, but they don't. They don't get to 30 against the Georgia defense. So if you're the LSU defensive staff, and you got to challenge those players, and they have to know, look, if we're going to pull this upset and walk out of Atlanta as the SEC champions, we've got to stop their offense, period.
No question.
And there is a pick-your-poison element to it that it's probably keeping that defensive staff up at night, for sure.
Yeah, I think so. And again, the other thing along with the running game that I love about this Georgia offense is pick-your-poison with the receivers. Ladd McConkey didn't have one catch the other day. They're playing Georgia. No, I don't care. Your second leading receiver behind Brock Bowers did not have one catch the other day. And it's been a multiple number of players who have shined in the passing game this year. A couple weeks ago, Kyrus Jackson, right, from Fort Valley, had the most receiving yards. It was like, wow, where'd that come from?
Yep.
You know, I mean, Ladd McConkey's done it a couple of times. Bowers, of course. Darnell could do his thing. I mean, look, I saw a mock draft this morning. Darnell was a late first rounder.
Wow.
So, I mean, you know, there are plenty of weapons to make it where we don't be surprised Monday when we're looking at this game, Russ, if we look back and say, well, you know, the problem was had nothing to do with LSU's offense. It was they couldn't stop Georgia.
Yeah. And, the thing about that is, and I think it was Brent Rollins that said this last week, they throw to routes. They don't throw to players.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get a team, especially a team this talented, bought into that concept, they are so hard to defend, because, like, if you're playing a team that's trying to get the ball to a specific receiver, so, you know, you come out and the defense has schemed it up and they're taking that player away, then you got to go to the sidelines and make adjustments. That never happens. The offense automatically adjusts because they throw to the open receiver. And that's another thing that makes this offense really tough to defend.
No question. No question. Sean sent me a tweet that I had actually retweeted earlier today. It also says a lot. Georgia has wins over four teams in the current college football playoff top 25 by an average of 42-10. That's number 7, Tennessee. This is the current rankings now. Number 16, Oregon. Number 19, South Carolina. Number 24, Mississippi State. They beat Tennessee 27-13, Oregon 49-3, South Carolina 48-7, and Mississippi State 45-19. So those four games against teams that are currently in the top 25, they beat those teams by an average score of 42-10. The Dogs play LSU, number 14 on Saturday. Michigan, TCU, USC, Ohio State, Bama, and Tennessee have each got two wins versus top 25 teams that are currently in the poll. That's why there's a lot of confidence about what could happen on Saturday at 4 o'clock in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. We'll take a break, come back, more college football talk, more about the coaching carousel. Then at the end of the hour, Wally Ballard will join us to talk about Brent Key and his fit at Georgia Tech. With Russ Brown, I'm Bill Shanks. You're listening to The Bill Shanks Show.
Now, back to The Bill Shanks Show on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, thesuperstations.com.
Welcome back. Thank you very much for being with us. Bill and Russ here on the radio. And a little more college football talk as more fallout, kind of, if you will, from the Auburn and Georgia Tech hires of Hugh Freeze for Auburn and Brent Key from Georgia Tech. I think from the reaction I've gotten from people, Russ, it's overwhelming that both fan bases are happy. Do you get that?
I do. And that's that, you know, for the Georgia Tech side, not a surprise, because, you know, Brent Key is a Georgia Tech guy. I have been a little bit surprised at the pushback on Willie Fritz, but
let's talk about that for a second.
Some people have talked about his record at Tulane, and it's like, do you understand what it means to have Tulane playing in an American Conference championship game and ranked in the top 25? If you can do that at Tulane, you can do that at Georgia Tech.
Well, and I don't know if you heard Kelly Quinlan on with Chuck earlier today. I think Kelly does a great job of covering Georgia Tech. He probably, you know, with Ron McKenzie and all of the guys that come on for us, Jonathan Leifheit and Wiley, of course, Kelly does a great job of covering that program. And he made the comment, I almost text you to see if you were listening to it when he made it, that Willie Fritz would have been okay in 2018, talking about when they replaced Paul Johnson with Jeff Collins, but not now. And he also speculated that, and I've seen this speculated on social media, that when the news came out on Sunday about Willie Fritz, that was kind of to see a trial balloon of how that would be reacted to. And the reaction was negative, mainly because of Willie's age of 62. Now, I don't know if, and this is not a comment on Jay Batt. I don't know Jay Batt. Wouldn't know if he walked in the building. I don't know if people are sometimes that smart to do things like that. Oh, let's see if the fan base will go for this guy.
Yeah,
I always think that's kind of a little much of a stretch.
I do too. No, I don't think that's what happened at all. I think it's more people have a tendency to, when somebody turns you down, throw them under the bus. I think it's more of that.
Yeah. Now, could there have been some pushback from some people on Willie's age? Perhaps.
Sure.
I think Kelly said he was, the ninth oldest coach in Division I football, I believe he said. Okay. And there's no question about the fact that probably when some people saw that he was 62 years old, they may have raised a little bit of an eyebrow. Because you wonder, all right, well, who's going to be able to build a program and be there for 10 years or more if he's 62 years old? And that's a fair, legitimate question. But, again, I think they were trying to find the best person, Russ. And, I mean, you know him much more than I do, but there was never any reason when he was at Georgia Southern in 14 and 15 to feel anything. But this guy's a heck of a coach. And so, look, I hope Brent Key works out for Georgia Tech and they don't look back and regret on passing on Willie Fritz or not getting it done, however we want to describe it, because I think he is a good coach, and I would hate that someone would be knocked because of being 62 years old when our damn president's 80.
Well, there's that.
There's that, right? But, but seriously, I mean, I he's a good coach, right?
Well, he's been a head coach since 1993, and the thing about Willie Fritz that I think people don't – it's because it's a lower level of college football that they don't follow. He won at Blinn, which is a junior college. He won at Central Missouri. He won at Sam Houston State. When he got to Georgia Southern, and I remember Coach Fritz saying this, how much he loved it, because everywhere he had been, he had to build a program. I mean, they had a team, but there was just no real – interest in the football program, and there was no history of winning, and he won at all three of those stops. Of course, he won in the 2 years he was at Georgia Southern, went 8-0 in the Sun Belt in the Eagles' first year in the Sun Belt and won the conference championship. And I know some people have pointed at his record at Tulane. Go look at Tulane's history.
Yeah.
I mean, he's built that thing at Tulane. the same way he did at Blinn, Central Missouri, and Sam Houston State. That's what he does. He builds programs. And that's why I think he would have been a good fit at Georgia Tech. And I'm not saying Brent Key isn't. I think Georgia Tech was in a win-win situation here. But he would have built that program back up the same way he did at Blinn, Central, Sam Houston, and Tulane.
Well, and some people that I saw on social media, and again, this is just kind of gauging the reaction to the fan base, said, well, why was he 2-10 in his sixth year? Okay. I mean, that's a fair question, but he rebounded to a 10-2 season this year. That ought to be the more important part, right?
Yeah. Well, he changed his offense up a little bit.
Okay.
And Georgia Tech fans may be saying, well, why was he 2-10? Well, you saw the offensive coordinator this year that was running that offense in 2021.
Right. That's right. That's so, right. I forgot.
You know, it just, so there may have been a little bit of a misstep from a program standpoint in getting away with what you normally do offensively and trying something new. And that's okay.
Yeah.
But it didn't work.
Because Willie was not any type of what Georgia Southern had been used to when he came, right? He was a little different. I mean, he wasn't pro style. But he was not your normal, triple option type situation.
No. He uses a different style of offensive lineman. He uses a different style of blocking up front. And there's still a lot of read option and triple option concepts in it. And it's run out of the shotgun. And so for the skill players, it's very similar. For the linemen, it's different. And then there's the pass, and the reason he does it out of the pistol and the shotgun is because he wants to throw it about 20, 25 times a game too. Mm-hmm. And it's just easier for his quarterback to throw from that position than being under center and trying to have a drop back game mixed in with an option attack. So that's why that is.
Well, he's been very successful, and I don't know if he'll stay at Tulane. I mean, he will for next year, but I don't know if he'll get another opportunity or if he'll stay there for the rest of his career. But he's a good football coach, and Georgia Tech fans should not have felt like they were, lowering themselves to go to Tulane to get someone by any means. But, again, and look, I don't think Auburn got their first choice. I think he's at Ole Miss. And, if Willie Fritz was their first choice at Georgia Tech. But, look, sometimes your second choice is better. Sometimes your second choice can be the right fit. Sometimes it can be a blessing in disguise. You can go through the history of football with coaches and say, well, we wanted Don Shula, but we wound up with somebody else, and it was okay. I just think it's so positive to see these two fan bases that obviously have been through a lot the last couple of years react so well to their new coaches. And I want to tell you, the video last night of the Georgia Tech players reacting to Brent Key being announced to them. I mean, I'm sure they probably already knew, but still, when Jay Batt came out in front of the Georgia Tech team and announced that it was going to be Brent Key, they went nuts. And you know what? In a way, that should be all that matters right there. Not that you want to make the players happy necessarily. You've got to do what's right for your program. But if you get that kind of reaction, you've done something right by hiring him.
Yeah. Well, he really – those players responded to him on the field. You could see it.
Certainly.
And it would have been really easy for them to just pack it up and call it a season. I mean, you look at a guy like Nate McCollum. I don't think he woke up on Sunday morning and said, you know what, I'm going to enter the portal. He's probably had that on his mind for weeks, but he still showed up and played hard every week for Brent Key. And I just, the older I get, the more like that's the number one criteria I look for in a head coach, not the scheme or the X's and O's or the resume. Do his players play hard for him? And the answer here is absolutely.
No question. No question about it. And we'll see how it works in recruiting, which is going to be kind of the next in line with the National Signing Day coming up in about 3 weeks. And, of course, the portal will be if we don't have activity from the baseball winter meetings next week, we'll have plenty of activity from the college football transfer portal, won't we?
Yeah, there'll be a stove. It just we'll see which burner.
Yes, exactly. All right, the Hawks play tonight at Orlando. And they have lost three in a row, three games. They led by double digits in each game. They have fallen from third to eighth in the Eastern Conference with their 11-10 record. Now, Orlando is not very good. They don't have a great record. They are 5-16, and I don't really know how because there's a lot of talent on there. And if you're going to watch this game tonight, you may want to watch this rookie that was the number one player in the draft Paolo Banchero, who, Russ, is averaging 23 points and 7 rebounds per game in his first 14 games of his NBA career.
That's impressive.
Pretty good pick, wasn't it?
Yeah, really good pick. I mean, despite where he went to school, just a heck of a basketball player. And that would be fun to watch tonight. And the Hawks need to win, period. I mean, they just you know, forget. We've talked about the shooting. We've talked about Nate McMillan. Just go win the basketball game tonight.
Absolutely. They got to figure it out. They got to get on track because it's not been a very good couple of days with some very ugly losses and the jeers for Mr. McMillan. I'm really going to watch the game to watch him, to see how they respond to him and how – because they've got to respond in a three-game losing streak against a bad team tonight. And this is a team they ought to beat, so we'll see how they do. By the way, from Twitter, our man Tucker Sargent, to our point, Bama wanted Rich Rod and got Saban. Worst day of my life when that happened. I'll never forget. Driving in Jacksonville, South Jacksonville, listening to Frank Frangie on the radio. Oh, Rich Rod's going to Alabama. And then, like, it was one of those things, like, by the end of the show, things had changed, Russ, which often happens in coaching things. Like, oh, he's not going. Oh, Alabama's in trouble. Yeah, I wish.
Yeah. Some trouble they ended up in.
Huh? I know. All right, we'll take a break. Come back. Wally Ballard will join us. We'll get his reaction to the hiring of Brent Key, that and more right after this.
Now, back to the Bill Shanks Show on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, thesuperstations.com.
Oh, man. Chris is out today sick, and Russ came through in the clutch and threw in the Michael Jackson Thriller just for our next guest, Wally Ballard from the Georgia Tech Radio Network, joining us to talk a little bit about the Georgia Tech news. And along that line, Bryce Kuhn, who's also on with Russ and Daniel on the Midday Show, has just reported that Chip Long and wide receiver coach Dell Alexander have been let go, along with strength and conditioning coach Lewis Corrala. And so the formation of Brent Key's staff has started. No surprise there. No surprise that Long is moving on there. Wiley, always great to have you on the show. Thank you very much. And your thoughts and reaction to the news that we heard yesterday about Brent Key being the new head coach.
Well, you know, to be honest with you, Bill, I mean, it was a couple days there after the end of the season. I think we were all kind of curious to see how it played out and what happened. And, you know, I do think that, you know, Georgia Tech's in a spot where I don't think you were going to make a hire that was beyond reproach. You know, I mean, I think everybody's going to have, you know, some strengths and weaknesses on the resume. But for me, Bill, to be quite honest with you, I kind of like the idea, you know, of a guy who really wants to be at Georgia Tech, and that's his dream job. You know, I think that is there's some value in that, because I think, you know, and I think any Tech fan would tell you, you know, the last 3-4 years has been kind of tough, especially from a football standpoint. And, you know, Georgia Tech, I mean, it's not the easiest place to win at times, and sometimes it can be a tough place to love. I mean, I'm sure there's some fans out there who've gotten frustrated. I know there have been some frustrating times for me, but, you know, I like the idea of a guy who, you know, doesn't need to be sold on the idea that Georgia Tech can win or be successful, that he's seen it personally as a player, and he believes and loves the place. And I do think that, you know, sometimes people will say, oh, that's overblown. And I'm not suggesting that that's the most important thing. The most important thing is you get some good players and you're able to, you know, put them in a position to win when it comes to scheme and everything else. But I think at a time like this, you know, when, you know, I mean, I think the last 8 games were a real boost for everybody's morale. But, you know, big picture-wise, this is a program that hasn't been to a bowl the last 4 years and has really struggled, you know, especially in the 38 games under Jeff Collins. That, you know, it's nice to have somebody, you know, is a firm believer in the program and, you know, isn't going to sit there and say, wow, you know, I'm walking into a really tough mess and, you know, maybe I don't know if it's possible to turn this thing around. So I think, you know, that's one thing that I think Brent Key is going to be able to bring is a sense of belief in Georgia Tech.
Wally, you and my other Tech guests, Rod and Jonathan, may get tired of me using comparisons to UGA, but I'll apologize in advance. But I will say that there is nothing better for me as a Georgia fan than to know that a former player is in love with his job as the head coach, and that the passion that Kirby Smart feels for the University of Georgia is will never be matched by anyone, no matter what happens. And I think, even not knowing what kind of permanent head coach Brent Key will be, knowing that he's going to have that same kind of passion for this program, it kind of starts him off at second base to begin with, doesn't it?
I completely agree. And look, I talked to some fans who will sit here and say, oh, the idea of being a tech man is overblown. And again, that's why I stress, this is not just about being a Georgia Tech. You got to get, they got to have good players. They got to have a good scheme. Like, there's a job to be done. But I also think there are those who discount, like you just talked about, the passion and the drive. And again, given where this program is at, Bill, I mean, like we said, they haven't made a bowl in the last 4 years. And again, you saw some signs of life in the last 8 games. But, you know, I don't think, you know, you could pay, you know, I mean, I know Bill O'Brien's name was in the mix. You could pay him $10 million, you know, or $12 million. It doesn't, just because you throw a few more million at him, you know, I don't think you're going to find an increase in that intrinsic personal motivation, you know, to what Georgia Tech means to somebody coming from the outside. And like I said, there's a bunch of other things that need to happen. You know, I think the president was very clear, Angel Cabrera, talking about how they intend to, you know, commit some more resources from a university standpoint to help the football program and all of athletics continue to elevate and be competitive on a national level. And all those things need to happen. But to me, I do think both in the locker room and among the longtime fans who have suffered the last 3 or 4 years through some really trying times, it's encouraging to see someone leading the program who, you know, in his heart of hearts, when it all comes down to it, not only loves the place, but I go back to believes in the place and believes that Georgia Tech can compete in the new era of transfer portal, NIL, and everything else. Because, I mean, look, I mean, obviously the sport has changed dramatically since when Paul Johnson was hired. I'd argue the sport has changed dramatically since Kirby Smart was hired.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's been a little bit of a whirlwind for all of us. And, you know, I think there are many programs across the country that are kind of asking, okay, conference realignment, NIL, transfer portal, like what is our role? You know, where does Kansas State or, you know, Cal or, you know, these not, you know, teams that aren't, you know, I say Kansas State's in the championship game this weekend, they were a bad example, but basically teams that aren't on the up and up right now, how do they try and rebuild and get back to where they've been in the past, but in a different set of circumstances like the world we're in today?
No question. Wally Bowden, our guest, talking Georgia Tech football. So we saw 8 games of Brent Key as the interim head coach, trying to make the impression, trying to get the job, and trying to save the season for his kids. They went 4-4. But can you tell us, Wiley, what else you saw from watching Brent Key's coached teams that we could look for moving forward now that he's the permanent head coach?
Well, to me, I really do feel like they did a nice job of simplifying things midseason. I'm curious to see what Brent is able to install when given a full runway going into a season. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the story's been told about the changes they had to make on the punt block unit in the week leading up to Pittsburgh, because, you know, I got the impression from what Brent said and the conversations I had that there were a lot of things that they would have liked to have changed, but just it wasn't feasible to be done, you know, 6 days away from playing Pittsburgh, or not even feasible to be done, you know, after getting those 2 wins against Pittsburgh and Duke. They got a week and a half off before Virginia and the bye and all that. So, you know, I think those are the things that I'm curious to see what happens in the future. But more than anything, I really felt like the team – look, I think with the way the season ended last year against Notre Dame and Georgia specifically, but really just losing those last 6 games, everyone knew from the start of the season, from the end of the – you know, from this time last year until the opening night against Clemson, just the pressure was going to be so, so great upon everybody involved. And in a lot of ways, with – Coach Collins being dismissed, it was kind of an exhale of, okay, you know, the worst case scenario has happened and what we were trying to avoid has happened. And look, I mean, that wasn't a positive, but in a lot of ways it kind of took some of the pressure of, we got to play perfect to try and, you know, save everyone's job and save the season. And once things kind of completely hit the fan, I felt like there was almost an exhale and a breath of like, okay, now let's just go focus on trying to win this game. You know, we don't need to worry about trying to, you know, save Coach Collins' job or anything like that. We can just sort of take a deep breath and go play. And the biggest thing to me, honestly, Bill, I think they simplified a lot of things and made it just easier to, you know, less thinking, more doing was kind of the sentiment I felt across the program.
Wally, what's next for him? Does he attack the portal?
Oh, I mean, Bill, I mean, again, unless you've got a roster like Clemson or Georgia, I mean, I think for about 95%, 98% of the teams in the country, it's attacking the portal this time of year.
Yeah.
So I think that's critical. I'm curious to see what happens with some of the guys, you know, Ryan King, Nate McCollum, were two names that I saw hit the portal or announced they were hitting the portal for Tech, although the portal doesn't open until next week. But they announced they're going to the portal. I'm not convinced that they may not come back to Georgia Tech because, look, I mean, it was pretty obvious where the players stood on who they wanted to be their head coach. And, you know, I'll be curious to see. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Nate McCollum could return, which would be big.
Yeah.
And you know, I obviously Georgia Tech's going to be looking for offensive linemen, defensive linemen, certainly a linebacker with losing AC Ealy and Charlie Thomas. They like Trenilius Tatum. But I think there's clearly another spot they got to fill. The problem is, when it comes to linemen, Bill, everybody and your mother's looking for them. So, I mean, they're a hot commodity.
No question. Well, it might be more activity in the college football hot stove league than the baseball hot stove league.
I think you might be right.
Wiley, the way this is going, because it's pretty active of the people just getting in there. Hey, great stuff. Thanks very much for your reaction. We'll keep on talking to you the next couple of weeks as we kind of watch all this unfold in the Brent Key era. Thank you so much, Wiley.
No, thank you, Bill. Thank you, Tardy.
All right. Wiley Ballard, our guest, again from the Georgia Tech Radio Network, one of our great Georgia Tech guests. You are listening to The Bill Shank Show.